Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world? You just tuned in to Blog Talk Radio, and this is Talk to Me, hosted by the one and the only, the most fantabulous, loveliest, wealthiest, and most jubilant sister in the world. That's right. My name is Minister Cherie Humphrey, and I'm the founder and president of Diamonds in the Rough, Finding the Spirit in Me, and the producer of A Star is Born Talent Events and Talk to Me Media. Our motto is Standing Firm on the Promises of God. I want to thank everybody for tuning back in. This is Diamonds in the Rough Talk to Me 11th year doing this broadcast, and I have met some awesome people. I have interviewed some fantabulous guests. We are reaching over 10,000 people, probably 50,000 by now, who knows, from other platforms. But in any case, I know we do reach India, we reach Brazil, we reach Canada, we reach Cameroon. There's so many other places that we are reaching, which I was astonished to see. So it is amazing to me. Welcome from around the world. For anybody that may be listening, the topic for tonight is, where are my reparations? And I'm going to get into that. And I want to give some announcements as first before I go and delve into the topic, because we have two wonderful men that are gracing the show on tonight. I just want to let people know, if you haven't listened to this show before, some of the people that have graced this show, is not all of them, of course, because I don't remember everyone who has been on here. But I know it's been well over 300 guests. We have had Marcel Lashley Davies, J.D. Lawrence, Calvin Richardson, Richmond Punch, Carmichael the Music Lover, Wendell B., Bernard Jackson of Surface, C.C. Peniston, Tony Redd, Judah Seeley, Darren Cookie Moore, Curtis Blow, Melba Moore, Glenn Jones, J.P. Justice, Drew Frazier, Stacey Lattersaw Jackson, Christopher Williams, Doobie Powell, Keisha Rainey, Hope Flood, Riff, Gerald Kelly, J.J. Harrison, Capone, FSW, Janice Dempsey, and A. Curtis Arrow, just to name a few. So keep tuning in. Let people know that this show is happening. Share the link. You can always go back at a later date, finish listening to the show, but share the link. Tell somebody about this show because we do some very real topics on this show. Okay, I like to keep it real as best as I possibly can. Okay, and so I do want to say happy birthday to all the July babies out there. I know there are several that I may know, but as of right now, I just don't know everybody's name. Most of the people in my immediate family are not born in the month of July, but I know I do have some extended cousins whose birthdays is falling in this month. So happy birthday. I want to say happy birthday, rest in heaven, Sean Evans. I called him Bubba. That was my best brother-in-law. He was so funny. He was the owner of Cut Masters Barbershop in Stamford, Connecticut on Richmond Hill. There was a big celebration down at Dyke Lane for him on yesterday, which is why I'm hoarse right now. From screaming, yelling, laughing, and just having a great time, I just want to send my condolences to everyone who has lost someone on this month. I do know that the person who was supposed to be coming on, who actually inspired this topic for today, James Keith out of Bridgeport, had a death in the family, and so he had to go away. And he is replaced, but he is replaced by somebody that, I mean, I don't even have much words because this man, legacy and what he does and what he's been doing for the community speaks for itself. And so I'm going to introduce him later on in the show for those who don't know him. I just want to tell everybody you can order my books. I have 19 books published. 4 of them are ebooks. You can go get my books. Go to my website, www.ditrfindingthespiritinme.org. Go to the book page. It will give you descriptions and it will give you prices of all of my books. And many of them are children books. I talk about real subjects to help your children to overcome and heal. And I also have books on relationships and, you know, other topics as well. If you are an art lover, I am also an artist. So please go to the art page on my website and you can order original paintings or you can order prints. You need to talk to me. So please reach out to me. If you think you can, we can do a payment plan. We can work on something. But look up there, see what you like. I don't have that much time left because my first caller is waiting patiently on the line. But you know I cannot go further without giving scriptures, and that's what I do on this show. So I am going to go to Numbers 5:7-8. And let me find that. I'm working here on opening stuff up on my computer. Normally I have things printed out, but in any case, I need to work on getting some more printer paper. But anyway, Numbers 5:7. Then he must confess his sin that he has committed and must make full reparation, add 1/5 to it, and give it to whomever he wronged. Okay, Proverbs 14:9. So let me get down to there. It says, fools mock at reparation, but among the upright there is favor. And then we go to Luke 19. I'm not going to read the entire chapter, but go to verse 8. Meanwhile, Zacchaeus stood before the Lord and said, I will give half my wealth to the poor, Lord, and if I have cheated people on their taxes, I will give them back 4 times as much. Jesus responded, saying, "Salvation has come to his home today, for this man has shown himself to be a true son of Abraham." And so we're talking about reparation. And I said to myself, do I even know fully what this word means? I know I studied it at some point in college, but that was many moons ago. So I was pleased to know that I did know exactly what it meant. And when I looked it up, it was exactly what I had thought it would mean. So I'm going to read to you, though, what it says. It says, "Reparation, the making of amends for a wrong one has done by paying money to or otherwise helping those who have been wronged." The other meaning is the action of repairing something. And so we know that upon slavery ending in this country, we were promised reparations, 40 acres and a mule. And, of course, we don't want no mule right now. These people who ain't farmers, I know I don't want no mule. I ain't got nowhere to keep no mule. But money would be good to suffice for what was done to our ancestors. And, therefore, some things still have trickled down from that time period, good and bad. So I have a guest that's coming on later on, Craig Kelly. He's going to teach us, and he's going to talk about reparations. This man is smart as a whip. So I'm going to sit back, and I'm going to listen to what he got to say. But for now, I have my first caller. If you can be patient, Mr. Whitley, I'm going to play about one minute of music, read your bio, and then I am going to click you in. I'm going to... let us hear a little bit of NDRE, Brown Skin.
Brown skin, you know I love your brown skin. I can't tell where yours begins. I can't tell where mine is. Brown skin, up against my brown skin. Been kissed by the sun. You make me want a Hershey's kiss. Your licorice. Every time I see your lips, it makes me think of honey coated chocolate. Your kisses are worth more than gold to me. I'll be your almond joy. You'll be my sugar daddy. Brown skin. You know I love your brown skin.
Yes, brown skin. Yes, she broke that down. I agree with you, Mrs. Indy Irie. Anyway, I am going to read the bio of my caller who is waiting patiently. His vision is no child shall be denied hope, or the Domus Foundation where he works for. No child shall be denied hope, love, or a fair chance in life. Change your thoughts and change your world. Norman Vincent Peale quoted that. And so I have Roland Whitley, who is my first caller on tonight. I'm going to read his bio. Roland Whitley was born and raised in the city of Bridgeport, Connecticut. He graduated from Harding High School and completed a year at Western Connecticut State University. Unfortunately, due to some negative past decisions, he found himself serving prison time. But upon his release, he was fortunately enlightened by his experience and became involved with some positive individuals who introduced him to some great programs in the community. He attended and is now an alumni of the Public Allies Program, Since then, he's been actively involved in some community programs, one being Hang Time, a program that deals with individuals who have had involvement with the criminal justice system. He's worked closely with Connecticut Against Violence. He's been given the opportunity to attend colleges and community schools for public speaking events where he's been able to share his life experiences. As of November 2018, he transitioned from working as an attendance coordinator in the high school to a transitional coach via DOMIS Reentry Program, where he's able to work with imprisoned individuals and assisting them with transitioning back into their communities. And so this is a wonderful thing and wonderful feat. And so I'm going to click him in right now.
Hello?
Hey, how you doing?
Hello, can you hear? I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fabulous. Thanks for asking.
Yes, yes. And I met you through a mutual friend of mine's over July 4th weekend, and I had been seeing you for several years at some functions that I attended. And I just never knew who you were. And you are such a strong man. And you're such a humble person, very giving, very sharing and kind. And that's what I gathered when I met you July 4th weekend. And so I just want to get into a little bit of questions about your past, because you've overcome so much. And I commend you for that.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
And so I can relate to some experiences you've had with being locked up, you know, because we all got a past, you know what I'm saying? So Tell me, what are some of the things that you learned from that experience that you went through when it came to the incarceration?
I think one of them is being humble and actually humble. And being true to yourself helping yourself before you can help somebody else. It's almost like, and I heard this from someone else, and it made sense, and I forget who it was, but they said, like, when you're on an airplane, the stewardess always says, if the oxygen mask come down, put it on your face first, then you can help someone else. Because you can't help no one if you gasp them for air. And I had to learn that. Through time and time and time again, because I always thought I had to help someone else before I helped myself. So over time, that became a part of my life, and becoming humble and understanding.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I totally can relate to that as well, and I agree with you. And so that's what you've done. You've helped yourself overcome, you've helped yourself and pulled yourself up by your bootstraps with the grace of God, and you have been an example to those men out there that have gone through some of the things that you've gone through. I'm familiar with DOMIS because that was out of Stamford, Connecticut, and I had a friend that used to work there and knew someone else that used to work in Stamford at the DOMIS Foundation, and has definitely grown since 20 years ago. So tell me a little bit about being involved with the DOMIS Foundation.
I started as a public ally. And with public ally, a guy by the name of Charlie Grady helped me get in at the time. And before all that, it was like Kingsley and Steve Nelson. And they was always trying to put me in the right direction, and they finally put me into the touches of DOMIS. And what happened was that it was just like part that was me, like coming up and doing this and doing that, and not really understanding why I was doing it or what I was doing. Just that it seemed fun to me. It seemed like I didn't have that I couldn't be stopped. And I seen that in a lot of these kids. So when I seen that, I said, I need to be part of this. I want them to see me and where I came from and let them know I'm part of them and they're part of me. And that's how I grow, too, because I've seen them grow.
Right, absolutely. And that is so true. I mean, because kids can touch you in a very special way. And we can learn from them as well. You know, not just them learning from us, but we can learn from them too. And, you know, we're working with kids for so many years, I found that to be true. And the way that you have been a part of these young teenagers' lives is definitely something that is special, and they will never forget. Is there any particular situation that stands out for you or person, young person that you've worked with that has been just something that is different that stood out for you that really said, wow, you know, I love what I'm doing right now?
Right. It's numerous accounts of this. I could be in CVS. I could be in a movie theater. I could be walking out of the store, and you have many male and female come up to me, and they tell me, listen, I was going down the wrong path, and I graduated high school because I heard you talk at my high school. Many times people say that, but it's one particular, and I'm going to give him a lot of credit because he's my, even not because he's my nephew, but because of what I've seen him do.
Right.
I think my nephew followed me in every aspect of my life. I played sports. He played sports. I sold drugs and robbed. He sold drugs and robbed. And I seen him going down my path, down the path that I went. And when I went to jail the last time, and I said, you know what? As soon as I get home, I'm grabbing my nephew and pick him up. Because I didn't want to see my sister's son go down the path that her brother did. And what I'm telling you, what my nephew does, it touches me every time I see him. You know, he just graduated and got his college diploma, his bachelor's. He's working like two or three different jobs. He's in the community heavy. And he did it all on his own, but I feel like I helped out when I picked him up. I'm doing this. I want you to do this.
Yeah.
And he just took it and went on another level.
Wow. That is special. I mean, and, you know, we want to help out the community, but when there's someone that is in our home or in our, you know, extended family, you know, it counts at home first because
right.
They looking at you. And we want to reach out to other people. If you see somebody in your own family, of course, you know, that should be like you said, that should be the first thing on your heart is to reach out because that's a part of you. You know, even more so. And so they matter as well. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, giving somebody food that's out on the street and then you got somebody in your own home that's hungry, you know,
right.
And ain't got nothing to eat. That don't make sense. That don't
mm-hmm.
make sense. So I think that's very good what you did. And, you know, continue to do the things that you do. Is there other anything, you know, things that you're involved with such as, like, I think you play on a team or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I play a couple sports. We just started a kickball league. Not myself, but this young lady named Tiffany, she just started a kickball league out in Stratford. So I'm involved with that. I got two teams in it. Hangtime sponsored one, and Murphy's Law sponsored the other. And then
okay.
I also play softball, and I play a little bit of flag football. So I try to stay as active as I can because I'm older and things of that nature. But playing sports also connect you to other people that you would never realize that play these sports. And that's for me, that's my outlet of connecting with other individuals like-minded or trying to get somewhere. And when I can put those two people that's like-minded like me or trying to get somewhere like I did or try to, and I can put them people together, that's a blessing for me. That's just open doors for everyone, you know?
Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely. And getting back to when I met you, I mean, it was just crazy because your mother is such a funny person. She shoots straight
uh-huh.
from the hip. She don't hold nothing
uh-huh.
back. And I love that. And it was her birthday
yeah.
as well. So, in any case, you know, and when I actually had the opportunity to talk to you, it was like, wow, this dude is mad cool. And, you know, you just extended yourself to me. And I was like, oh, that's so sweet, you know. And, you know, I just loved your honesty and, you know, and your boldness. I loved your boldness because I don't get that a lot of times. You know, people be, you know, especially men, you know, afraid to come up to me as if I, you know, am like a monster, like I'm going to go crazy and bite their head off. You know, I don't know what kind of look I got, but... You didn't care. You came over and was like, look, I want to be on your show. This is who I am. I'm doing a production. So I'm like, all right. You know, but
because I think exposure for both. Like, you know,
yes.
Me being up here, put my voice and my name is great. You allow me to do that, and then the part that I'm in with the documentary. That'd be, hopefully this will get on there too. And that was my main idea of having this get on there, because now, boom, if it gets big, then boom, people are also not just wherever, but, you know, maybe that little corner that you didn't get, now I can hear your radio station. You know what I mean? Because somebody put me into this radio station. I mean, into the documentary. You know, somebody didn't just find me. Someone put me, Kool-Aid, Lewis Reed. Like, yo, Roland, I'm doing A, B, C, and D. I'm like, I bet. You know, so that's why I extend my hand out to people, because someone extended their hand out to me. So I'll be selfish as a person to not help the next person.
Right, and that's what my next question was about the documentary that you're going to be in, that you're working on right now. I talked to your producer, and, you know, she explained to me a little bit more. So you're talking about Lewis Reed. Is he taking over for ABC now?
He's what?
ABCD. Is he, like, I know the former president, you know, is not there anymore. He passed away. So you're talking about the affiliation from ABCD here in Bridgeport.
I mean, Lewis Reed?
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I'm asking.
I don't think he's part of the ABCD, but with Kool-Aid, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what he may be into, a little bit of everything. ABCD, FGIG, GI Joe, everything. He got his hand in a lot of things.
Okay.
Kool-Aid could be anywhere. Kool-Aid might be on his phone call, so.
Okay. All right.
For real.
So, very quickly, I want to find out a little bit more about the documentary, but very quickly, what are your thoughts on reparations?
What
are your thoughts on reparations? Because today's show is about, where are my reparations?
Oh, I heard you
usually ask one question.
So listen, I want my meal. You said you couldn't do nothing with mule. Listen, if they give me 40 acres, I could do something with that mule.
Okay. Well, you're going to have to come over and help me with my land, because I ain't going to be out here killing nothing. I don't even know how to keep a plant alive.
Listen. Where we come from and what we have done, and just in our history of who we are as people, once we get it, we know how to do what we need to do with it. There's no question.
Right.
But when you say what do I think or what do I believe of it, it's wild. You know, we've been down for most of since 4th of July when it started, you know.
Right.
And it's crazy how we celebrate that, though, right? The independence, right?
Exactly.
And we still haven't truly got our independence. But I think that's
right.
I think that's for me, it's different. It's not what it really is. So I don't even know why sometimes we even use it, because when have we gotten it? When have we been equally given anything? To be honest with you, and I don't want you to just give me anything. You know, as a people, we should be given a right to equally have whatever we need in life. And
absolutely.
And at times, and many times, we don't get that. So reparation is like, okay, now what? In my opinion, you know?
Okay.
So,
I hear you.
It's a word, in my opinion, right? You know what I mean?
Right.
Some people may say, well, we need it. We should get this. Well, we should. Then what is it for us to do it? What do we have to do to get it there? You know?
Exactly. That's my question.
Because
it's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a long
time.
And then the little bit of, I know they gave us something, supposedly the people something, and they took it back within days or weeks or whatever the case may be. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It is what it be.
You're exactly right. And you know what? You're so on point with that. But I think it starts from home and school, what you're taught, what you're conditioned to know, what you're conditioned to learn. And so you have to undo all the stuff that is incorrect, that is wrong, that was pushed on into our minds as babies. You know, to be able to understand. And that's why my next caller who's coming on now is the perfect person to talk about this, because he taught me a lot, you know, as a grown woman who had been to four colleges, okay, and got a master's.
Right.
He still taught me a whole lot, and even about Bridgeport that I didn't even know. So we're going to get into that, but I appreciate your thoughts and feelings on that. Is there anything else very quickly you would like to say about the documentary? When is it coming out? Where can people get in touch with you?
So if I'm going to be honest with you, me personally, I don't know when it's coming out. I don't know if we got a name for it. I'm a small part in it, one of the small parts in it. And it's about the importance of education and imprisonment, you know. I think you just touched on that, you know. And me personally, when I think of education, I don't think it's about book smarts. I'm talking about the learning of self, you know.
Yeah.
And importance of a prison. If you look at where the prison, most prisons are, they're either way up in the mountains or right there in the inner city.
Uh-huh.
And you got, like, look at Bridgeport. You got a jail right across the street from a high school. Where they do that at?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, so. Basically, that's what the documentary is about, and I'm just proud to be part of it. I'm glad and appreciated that you allow me to be part of this right here, of your talk show, and thank you.
Thank you for coming on. Thank you for coming on. I appreciate you, and I'm going to be looking forward to seeing the end product, but I know I'm going to be seeing you off and on anyway. So I just want to say thank you very much. You have a really blessed night, and keep up the good work.
Thank you. You're well. Thank you. See you soon.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Bye-bye. There you have it. That was Roland Whitley, who's working on the documentary, along with some other people in the Bridgeport community. So look out for that. You know, I will keep you abreast once I find out as well. I am going to play another song real quick, and then we are going to hear from our next caller.
Put your bad self. Say it loud. Say it loud. Say it loud. Some people say we got a lot of malice. Some say it's a lot of nerve. We get what we deserve. We've been duped, and we've been scorned. We've been treated bad, talked about, as you and you moan. But just as you, as it takes you eyes to make a pair. Brother, we can't quit until we get our share. We're tired of beating our head against the wall and working with someone else. Say it loud. 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 Ow!
That was James Brown, "Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud." My mother used to sing that all the time when I was young. Well, not all the time, but a lot of times. And I was like, never knew what it derived from, never really understand. But I sure do now. And I always wanted to be a part of the NAACP. As a young child growing up, watching Roots and all these different movies, and not seeing enough of me on the TV and people that represented who we are, and going to school and college, opening my eyes, going to, you know, Howard University, Wilberforce University, and seeing the difference between a black college and a white college, you know, at UConn and UB, you know, it opened me up to so much, and not just school stuff, life experience. You know, I experienced prejudice in third grade, you know, so I understood, you know, more and more what this song means to us and what it represents. And so I have this person who's coming on. I really look up to this man. And he, I don't have a bio for him because he kind of filled in at the last minute, which I was appreciative of. So I'm going to plug him in right now. He's going to tell you who he is.
Hello.
Hello. Hi. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm fine, Mr. Kelly. I'm fine. Yes. And thank you so much for filling in for James. I found out the last minute he had a death in the family. He is away and couldn't talk on this. And I just said, Lord, who do I know that knows about this subject and can explain and teach on this, you know, for this show? And you just instantly popped into my spirit. So I am so glad, you know, that this was aligned this way. Can you just tell us, for people who don't know you and not from Bridgeport, just a little bit of background about yourself?
Wow. That could be, let me try to give you a short version, because there's a long version and we don't have enough time.
Right.
Well, I'm a single parent. I've raised two children by myself. I'm a former member of the Black Panther Party. I'm a retired firefighter. I worked, counseled the mothers of 9/11 and the World Trade Center disaster. And I also work for SAMHSA, Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services, which is a branch of the U.S. Department of Health during Katrina. That and more you can probably get from the website, you know, originalancestors.com. You know, I'll stop it there.
Yes.
You know, I have a magazine council. So anyway, so that's me.
Yes. Yeah, well, you being definitely humble. Believe me, everyone, this man has done way more than what he's saying. And that he already said a mouthful. And when you said when I was on the board with you, you appointed me chair of communications, transferring from the NAACP in Stanford. And you were the president here. And I learned a lot. I was very quiet for most of the 2 years I think I was on the board. But I was very quiet, and I learned a lot. I took a lot in. And, watching you, watching an educated, strong black man who knew so much and was so involved, and you have such a big heart, I just looked up to you. And when you took me to the gun range, that's a story I never forget. I have told everyone about it. That was so special to me, believe me. Coming from, you know, someone who was raised by their great-grandparents and my grandfather with his three shotguns, and, you know, I loved it. You was like, wow, you done this before? You like an excellent shooter. And I was like, nope. But in any case, Craig, please explain to us what this means when we're talking about reparations.
You said explain what now? I just want to be clear on what you're asking.
reparations, what does that mean to you? And could you, you know, just, you know, expound on that particular word?
Well, reparations means a repay for basically, in this case, past injustices. Just like the Japanese had received reparations for their for being incarcerated in internment camps during the 40s. As it relates to African-American people, before we get into reparations, we have to understand how we got here.
Because
I don't think it's fair just to jump into reparations and people will say, okay, yeah, give me my money, you know, but
right.
There's a systematic process as to how we arrived at this point. We look at this country and we say that, they're always referring to the founding fathers of this country. And you have to keep in mind, the founding fathers, when they founded this country, they were slave owners. So, they founded the country, but they were slave owners. And took the land from the Indians, and then they brought us over here. So, and we have to understand the system that they set up. You know, setting up a system in which anything other than Caucasian, any other thing than pure white, okay, is evil. So then there was never an acknowledgement of us as human beings. So therefore, whatever they did to us, with the clear understanding that I wasn't doing this to a human being, I'm doing this to a thing, because we were classified as property. So we you know, you don't call property human.
Exactly. Right.
So they had through this process, you know, evolved over the years, and even to compound it even further, what they did is that they said it was God's will. So they added God to the equation, you know, ultimately making God complicit in the institution of white supremacy.
My God.
So we understand that we are here at this point talking about reparations, talking about past harms that was done to us, and compensation. There are some scholars, and I have a few friends of mine that are on the reparations committee, James McIntosh out of New York, and Ray Winbush, and a few other people that are on the International Reparations Committee. But the reality is that if we, according to a lot of them, it would cost trillions of dollars for them to compensate African-American people in this country for the enslavement. Not billions, but trillions of dollars. But you're talking about the enslavement of people for over 200 years.
So, if they were to pay us trillions, this country would definitely be broke and be in debt.
First of all, they're not going to pay us even millions. They don't want to pay us anything. Let's be real about that.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's been a cry for a while, and it's become even more of a cry since obviously the death of George Floyd. They're not going to necessarily give us anything. We have to make them give us stuff. We have to make them give us reparations. It's not going to just come out of the sky. And that pressure is going to have to come from a variety of different people who are affluent and linked to money. In other words, they generate income. For example, you look at ball players, you look at these athletes, then you look at their sponsorship behind them. You know, so they're the ones that are going to be pushing it out there. And hopefully over time the corporations will look at it and say, okay, yeah, because they got rich based on free labor.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So that's the beginning of reparations in terms of understanding how we got to this point from the beginning up to this point. And I think the reparations certainly can come in many different forms, considered that we've been it could come in a form of free health care, you know, could come in a form of housing, education, you know. Let me take education out. Housing, you know, health care, things like that, you know, better health care. I don't want to say education simply because it's almost it's extremely ironic to have the same people or the same system that enslave you to educate your children.
That's right. You know? Hello.
And so, yeah, so it's kind of a, you know, it's kind of a, you know, interesting situation. You know, no Jewish person, okay, would have the mindset of someone like Adolf Hitler teach their children.
Right, right.
No,
nope. Absolutely.
Jewish person.
And let me interject right there.
We have the mindset.
Let me interject right there, Craig.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Can you hear me? That's all right.
Yeah.
I'm using my other phone, and I don't normally use this phone, but my normal phone is volumes messed up. Something's wrong with it. But anyway, when I first went away to college, I did not think I was going to college ever. It was not a dream. It was not something I wanted to do. It was not pushed upon me. I was the first generation in my circle, a nucleus of family and very close extended family members. So going to school was like something far-fetched that I would never even have tried to obtain. Okay, I thought I was going to be famous and have a recording contract by the time I was 18. And when that didn't happen after being in entertainment since I was 5, I was very upset and disappointed. I had fooled around so much in school and gotten suspended for fighting so much. And I felt as though, why am I learning this stuff? And then there was a white woman teaching black history to us. And I immediately rejected it because I knew at that age of 17, this is impossible. How can she teach me something that she don't even know about? She don't even have an innate experience with it. So I immediately rejected that. Now, long story short, if it wasn't for my very close friend and her family, I would have never been in school. But once I got to Wilberforce University, I was taught so much stuff. It blew my mind. My whole world began to turn. And I excelled, and I didn't even know I was going to excel. And I was being taught so much about our history, who we are, mm-hmm. these people who were passionate, who cared, who loved us as kids being in their class. You felt the love. You know, you felt them being hard on you because they said we had to be twice as better than our counterparts. So I was like, wow, look at all these inventors. I had no idea because that we were not taught that. And then when my goddaughter was 9 and I'm here, I'm a young woman, I'm traveling, I'm seeing all these different places, and then I knew Christopher Columbus didn't discover anything. And so I said, you go into that classroom and you tell that teacher that your godmother said, stop teaching lies, and you are not going to learn about Christopher Columbus. And that's exactly what she did. And so she said that the teacher wanted to meet me. So I said, okay, he's going to meet me soon. And so I said, you ain't got to learn about Christopher Columbus at all. And I was teaching her black history at home, okay? So, you know, it goes back to what you were saying. You know, Jewish people are not going to have Hitler teaching their children. You know, they take their education very seriously, which as a whole, African Americans, to me, I believe, we done fell off. We don't take it seriously. We're not instilling that as a whole, for the most part, in our children like it used to be. You know, so what do you think has been the change or the breakdown?
change for the breakdown
in our families, yeah, wanting to be educated or pushing their kids to learn. You know, it's like, oh, well, that type of attitude. You know, when I work in the public school system, kids, parents didn't even want to come in. You know,
well, yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean.
Well, that's the question. Some parents, not all, but some parents are apprehensive about coming in because of their own inability to have acquired, you know, a academic understanding. You know, they haven't finished school, so or if they did, they barely finished school. And so they may have some level of feeling inferior in terms of coming in and dealing with the teacher in terms of, you know. But it's also, but it also has to do with how, what they're taught. You know, our children in schools are, you know, are never taught the real history of this country, you know. So they, so there's a high level of confusion, you know, because on one hand they hear from different sources, you know, whether it be, you know, through the, you know, we hear through either Facebook, social media, or you know, or Instagram, or you know, or Twitter, you know, so we know a lot of stuff that they're throwing at us in the school system, you know, is basically BS, you know, so there's a conflict of thinking there, you know, and,
right.
and so they so the school system is not gonna, you know, parents have to push the school system. Anything in relationship to our history, they're gonna have to push, you know,
right.
you know, because the system in and of itself is not going to teach you anything about yourself. It never did and never will. You know,
I mean, even though
the state of Connecticut, it's kind of, I guess they've been mandated to teach African-American and Latinx history, as they call it, through the state.
Okay.
You know, in the state of Connecticut. Yeah, but, you know, I don't see that coming anytime soon because, you know, the first time, you know, they say, well, you know, we don't have any money. You know, that's the first thing they go,
right.
Oh, we don't have any money to do this. You know, and if they do, they're going to hire some guy that's going to give them a watered down version of the history of America. You know, and in saying that, I want to point this out and maybe give this out to your listeners and also yourself. Have you seen Exterminate the Brutes?
No, I haven't, but I'm certainly going to look for it now that you said it.
Yeah.
For real.
HBO. Yeah, it's an HBO documentary. It's a four-part series. Each series is an hour, you don't have to see it all at once. But it's on HBO, and it's called Exterminate the Brutes. And it's written by a guy by the name of Raul, what's his last name? I can't remember his man's name, but he's the same director who put the documentary together, I'm Not Your Negro. He's the same,
okay.
Raul Peck. That's his name.
Okay.
Yeah, P-E-K. He's actually Haitian, you know.
Okay.
And he put the documentary, he's the one who put the documentary together on James Baldwin, I'm Not Your Negro. And he also put this documentary together, Exterminate the Brutes. Now, Exterminate the Brutes is an international understanding of the process of white supremacy globally and how it operates. It's a very, very excellent documentary, well-researched, well-documented. So, you know, so people get a chance, they should take a look at that because they'll gain more from that than they would from any – you know, any graduate class they'll be taking in the area of history, in the area of white supremacy in this country.
Yes, absolutely. And I love watching documentaries, even though you know, I'm considered educated, I still continue my educating by educating myself continually, because I feel as though we never know everything and we can always learn. And like I said, you can learn from a drug addict, you can learn from an alcoholic, you can learn from a child, okay? So, you know, I don't never try to close myself off from getting a different perspective or understanding, you know, and because I love to learn, period. That's just me. And, you know, I've had children, like Roland was saying, you know, their parents, you know, seeing me now from when I was teaching 20 years ago, or, you know, holding programs, and I would teach the kids Black history. I would bring in cards of Black inventors for them to learn. And when I traveled, I would bring items that I got from these different countries and bring it in and show them. And so, you know, it's just been a blessing to see, oh, your baby, then she's traveling here and he done went over here. Or, you know, and you got these kids who were tearing up the place when I first got up in there, you know, working for the housing and running this program, Fairfield Court. They, I mean, it was like 42 of them. They was busting stuff up, fighting, beating each other up. I mean, doing all kind of crazy stuff. Third graders drinking and smoking. It was just incredible. And you can turn somebody around. You can get these kids at an early age when their minds are viable and easy to you know, grasp, and they take everything in like a sponge. So if you're teaching them good things and you're teaching them about who they are and establishing a sense of wealth and worth and self-esteem in them, they can do great things coming out of the ghetto. It's not all about the money. It's about what your drive is and what you want to do and how you want to, who you want to be. You know what I'm saying? And you are an example of that, because I had never met nobody that was a part of the Black Panther. I mean, I wanted to be a part of the Black Panther, but I was like born too late.
I don't know if you're, yeah, right, exactly. Even if you were born during that time period, I mean, a lot of people would love to be a part of it, but, you know, hey, you know, like I said, you were born a little bit too late.
Yep.
You know, but you still have that fight, that spirit in you, which is good, you know, and that's mm-hmm. what we need, people to have that fight, that spirit in them, and to want to continue to fight, you know, or as
right.
John Lewis said, you know, keep up the good fight, you know, mm-hmm. so we have to, you know, so I honor you in the fact that you have continued to keep up the good fight.
Thank you. It ain't been easy. It's been rough, but I'm hanging in there.
You probably wouldn't, if it was easy to you, you probably wouldn't appreciate it.
That's true. I wouldn't.
You're
right.
If somebody gave you $1,000, it just said, here's $1,000. Now, you know, the average person, you know, probably just go ahead and spend it on something they wanted, you know, they would want. Now, if you had
mm-hmm.
to work for that $1,000,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, there's a different mindset. You might say, hey, look, I need to put this in the bank. I need to do something with it, you know, put it away,
right.
You know, save it for any day, whatever the case may be, as opposed to just spending it. So,
And you're
so,
right. I mean, but now as I've struggled so much in life, especially in the past 15 years, you know,
mm-hmm.
I have a different thought process. And when I'm thinking now investment, I'm 50 now, I'm thinking, how can I, what my retirement is going to be like? How am I going to live when I'm 60? You know,
right,
so
right.
My way of thinking, $50,000 is way different than it was when I was in my 30s. I would have spent it right then and there, but I've been gone by the next day.
Yeah, right. Look, I was just adding to your point when you said it wasn't easy. And I said, yeah, it wasn't easy because if it was easy, you wouldn't respect it. And so I was just drawing an analogy when I raised the issue of the money. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Just an analogy, one person gets it easy, the other person, has to work for it. You know, so, but that's understanding, So you're 50.
Yep, I just turned 50 this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
My son's 49. He's a year behind you.
Yep, he's a year behind me. Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's wonderful. And I have the picture up of you and your two sons so people can look at the pictures on the show page. And very quickly, is it a last-minute thing you want to say, or how could people, get involved with the original ancestors?
Well, they can actually go to the website. There's a lot of information on the website. Also, I'm on Facebook, so I post a lot of history on African American history, ancient African history, Egyptian history. I post just a lot of stuff in general, and basically just trying to share information. Information's no good to share it anyway. So if you know something, it's like, okay, fine. What does that mean for anybody else? So the information, so what I do is that I seek to share information, whatever I know, and just try to impart some level of understanding. And my thing is that once, I post it and, people look at it and, but whatever I post, is documented. You can go look it up. You don't have to take my word for it, We live in an informational age right now. Somebody tells you something, you go, yeah, okay, right. But you could always validate it and look it up. And I encourage people to do so, to look it up, as opposed to just saying, oh, yeah. Because if you look it up, you take the time to look it up, you'll remember it. Remember because you took time and energy to look it up. And so that's important for us to be able to look it up in the process of becoming critical thinkers.
Right. You're so right. absolutely. And I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming on again, with short notice and teaching us and shedding some light on this subject. And I appreciate it. And you have a blessed and wonderful night.
All right. You too. Be well and be blessed.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
There you have it. That was Craig Kelly, former president of the NAACP here in Bridgeport, and former Black Panther member, and so many other things he mentioned and some he didn't mention. So check him out on his Facebook page if you want to be enlightened by anything that was shared on tonight or, that he mentioned. He is definitely a good guy and knows what he's talking about. There's so much rich history just alone for the Bridgeport area that many people may not know. And so it's just wonderful to just hear, and know of certain things. So I want to thank both my guests for coming on tonight on Talk to Me Radio. This is Cherie Humphrey of Diamonds in the Rough. If you'd like to be on this show, please contact me. You can call me 203-952-9807. You text me first. I do screen my calls. I will not pick up if I don't recognize your number. You can inbox me on Facebook if you have a serious inquiry, if you want to buy any artwork or any books, if you think a particular school might need some of the books and the subjects that I have written on for children, some coloring books, kids books for all ages, and other books that I have written as well. 19 publications out, some just the fun books. I have a plethora of artwork that you can purchase. If you can't afford original, you can buy print. So please contact me. If there's anyone that would like to donate to Diamonds in the Rough, Talk to Me Radio Media, please do so by the Cash App. God leads you and he impresses upon your heart to do so. I definitely will appreciate anything that is being sent because this is a job. This is not, people think, oh, this is just something you can just do and get on and be like, okay, it's done. No, it doesn't work that way. You know, after 11 years, you know, of course, it's been much, much easier, but I still get my little butterflies, and thank God for those butterflies, because I don't want to become so grand that I think that I got it like that and mess up the broadcast. So it takes work to find people. It takes work to get these people to send in their information. Sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. You got to definitely be prepared for last minute changes. And you got to ask the questions and you have to get everybody on the same page. And so I thank the Lord for being able to, you know, endow me with this particular gift and, you know, to be able to have spoken to so many people across the United States in various subjects and capacities. So thank God for that. Tune in again and remember, you know, to keep safe. COVID, I hear, is coming back with a vengeance. So I hope that doesn't happen, but, it, you know, be prepared. Stay safe. God bless. I'm going to take us out with a little bit of music. Flavor, Black, My Black is Beautiful. So good night. Thank you so much.
I can see her from afar. She just a shine like a morning light. I can see very clear. She just a shine in a broad daylight. And she was walking and I was watching every step and the move she was making. She is adoring, I am admiring her hips and her curves. Beauty is a natural thing, original thing and a mysterious thing. Raise up my voice and sing, I thank the Lord for a beauty queen. Cause your black is beautiful,
beauty from my own.
Baby, your black is beautiful. Baby, more
beauty,
more
beauty, more beauty.
And your black is beautiful. Black is beautiful. And your black is natural. Black is original. Yo, my mama. Che-che-che, she is black, she is proud and she knows it. She is cool and everybody likes it. She is bold and she's very, very humble. She is strong and can never, never fumble. She is courageous, a Sagittarius. The kind of woman I can take so serious. She's got the fire in her eyes that when you look at her, you will realize.